Now, usually in this church, we would start with a reading from the Bible, and then someone would come and explain it to us to help us think how it applies to our lives. Now, this time, we are going to have the reading at the end. Because what I want to do is put the verses that we're looking at today in Proverbs in their proper place in the Bible. And then hopefully, after that, you are going to see how amazing, how awesome these wisdom sayings are. We're going to spend a bit of time jumping around the Bible today, so I'd love it. If you haven't already, if you could get a Bible in front of you, that'd be amazing. For those of you who don't have one but you are using a computer, you can go to BibleGateway.com. You could type that into your search bars, BibleGateway.com. You'll be able to find a Bible there. It'd be great to get a Bible in front of you as we're going to be moving around it. Now, a few years ago, I was working in a small charity that worked with looked-after children. It was a very small staff team, and one day our line managers were off, okay, and we were left to the kind of list of work that we had to do. Now, obviously, we did the work. We didn't do it 100%. We did the work, and then we went home early, knowing that we'd basically kind of tick the boxes, but we'd not tick the boxes very well. Really, we should have been there for the whole time. It was the wrong thing to do. Now, this got back to the managers, and the next week, we were called into the office to make a statement for what happened. And one of my colleagues came over to me and told me what they'd said, and they told me to lie. Small staff team, close relationships. You're going to lie, right, Aaron? Aren't you? And I thought about it. And I said, no. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to tell what happened. And when my other colleague heard that, she ran out crying. I felt rubbish. But I did it because I was a Christian. Now, why? Why is the question that I've got? Why is acting rightly the right thing to do? Why is that? Why is it better to act right than save face? Why is it better to act right and be okay with everyone? Why is it better to be wise? Why is it better to be godly? Now, over the last month or so, we've been going through the book of Proverbs, and we saw right from the start that fearing the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And what fear means, Neil explained it to us very helpfully last week. And what that means is having a right honor, a right respect for our powerful God. And knowing that the choices that we make in life matters. We've seen the understanding of who God is provides real wisdom about how we live. And last week, we went through the 30 sayings of the wise, which I love. That's a brilliant title. And this week, we're going to be heading into chapters 25 to 29. There's five more chapters of kind of wisdom sayings. I wonder if studying Proverbs together has made a difference to your life. I wonder if you can look back and see if it has changed your actions. I want to show you this morning that every time you choose an act of wisdom, it is an act of war. Now, I'm not just being dramatic here. Preachers love to be dramatic. I'm not being dramatic here. I want to take a step back from these Proverbs this morning and look at where they sit in God's story. My prayer has been that this would help motivate you to make a difference by choosing wisdom. Every time you choose wisdom, it is an act of war. I'm going to show you that in three ways. Here's the first one. Choosing wisdom is an act of war against evil. Choosing wisdom is an act of war against evil. I wonder what you think when I start talking about the devil. Maybe this could be a topic over Sunday lunch when you're sat round eating your roast dinner, and someone takes the brave step and says, so what do you think about Satan? In today's world, it's a weird thing to be talking about spiritual evil, isn't it? Invisible things that are out to get you. It sounds like Halloween. But this church believes the Bible. And in the New Testament, one of Jesus' best friends says, "Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour." That's after the cross. Do we believe in evil spiritual forces that are at work in the world? Yes. Yes, I do. But not only because God tells me it's true in the Bible, but because I see it in the world today. Now, if the devil is an evil spiritual being that is out to stop the spread of God's kingdom, please answer this. Who are going to be the targets? See, it's not the people that think that the devil is this kind of invisible force that takes things away from people, a bit like an anti-Santa, right? The devil is anti-Santa. So Santa runs around giving everyone presents, and the devil runs around and taking it away. He comes a laughing stock. They're not targets for the devil. They're not advancing the kingdom that is against him. Who are going to be the targets? It's the people who oppose him, isn't it? It's Christians. The devil is at war against Christians. And each act of wisdom that you choose is an act of war against evil and everything that he stands for. Look, it's all well and good me saying this, but please can I show you? Turn to Genesis chapter 3. Okay, if you could find Genesis chapter 3 or search for it in your on Bible Gateway or online, that'd be a great thing to do. Turn to Genesis chapter 3. I'm going to read from verse 1. "Now the snake was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord God had made. He said to the woman," this is the snake talking, okay, so we can begin to realize that this is imagery here. "He said to the woman, 'Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?'" Valid question. "The woman said to the snake, 'We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say, you must not eat from the fruit that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it, or you will die.'" "You certainly will not die," the snake said to the woman. "For God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And when this woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining," what? It's wisdom. You see, right from the start, it's desirable for gaining wisdom. "She took some and she ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it." Did you see what the devil did there? He took away the fear of the Lord. You won't die. God wouldn't do that to you. And once he had taken away the fear, he started to show God was selfish. God knows that when you eat from the fruit, you will be like him. He's dressing foolishness up as wisdom. You can be wise just without God. Don't follow your king. Don't fear your king. Become God yourself. Stand against him. He gets them to do exactly what he's done. Stand against God. Now, if you keep those things in mind, by the way, I mentioned that I do fully believe this might have been a literal talking snake. That's fine. I do believe that. I believe there's imagery that does convey that there's wording in Genesis that does convey, I think, that this is more of an image, but I'm happy to be debating on that. You can email me this week. Could you turn to Proverbs chapter 9, verse 13? Now, we've looked at this before, haven't we? So Proverbs chapter 9, verse 13. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 13 is all about Lady Folly, and it's foolishness personified as a woman who is calling out to try to invite people in. I want to see the similarity between folly and what the devil did in Genesis 3. Look at this. "Folly is an unruly woman. She is simple and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point in the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way, 'Let all who are simple come to my house.' To those who have no sense," she says, "stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, and her guests are deep in the realm of the dead." And did you see the similarity between Lady Folly and the devil? Don't you see there is a direct link between foolishness and evil? Don't you see that foolishness dresses up foolishness as wisdom and takes away the fear of the Lord? Make yourself feel better. Don't worry about what God thinks. It's fine. Here and now, it's fine. And we head back to Proverbs and we realize that every act of wisdom that we choose is a choice to stand against that worldview. It's a choice to fear the Lord. The Christian is not about passively going through life. It's about actively choosing wisdom. So chapter 29, verse 2, when the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan. Being a Christian sometimes means leading people with wisdom. Chapter 29, verse 7, the righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. Why? Because the righteous have a fear of the Lord. Mockers stir up a city, chapter 29, verse 8, but the wise turn away anger. Guys, if we're going to be turning away anger, might I suggest that we need to be talking to people? Chapter 29, verse 10, the bloodthirsty hate a person of integrity and seek to kill the upright. Why? Well, because we are in a spiritual war. And every time you choose God and live with wisdom, every time you manage your employees with wisdom or choose integrity with your colleagues, choose integrity when your colleagues don't, you are staging an act of war against the spread of evil. Choosing wisdom is an act of war against evil. Number two, choosing wisdom is an act of war against fools. Choosing wisdom is an act of war against fools. Now, if you would, turn with me to Exodus chapter 32. Okay, a second book in the Bible. I'm saying that to remind myself, not you. Exodus chapter 32, verse 1. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said, "Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him." Aaron answered them, "Take off the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing and bring them to me." So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they handed him and made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, "These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, when he saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and announced, "Tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord." And the next day, people rose early and sacrificed burnt offerings and presented fellowship offerings. Afterwards, they sat down to eat and drink and indulge in revelry. Do you ever get frustrated that you can't see God? Now, of course you do. Yeah. You have faith because you see the evidence of God around you. But sadly, there are people in this world that regardless of the evidence they see, they will never believe in God. Who, given huge amounts of reasons to believe, they will always choose foolishness. Now, God knows who these people are. We don't, which is good news. Now, these Israelites have just witnessed firsthand the 10 plagues, right? They've seen it happen. They were involved in it. They felt the feelings, they saw the sights, it was an incredible thing. Then they've got the Red Sea, then they've got God's descent on this mountain that is because of God's presence on fire, thundering and smoking, it's right there with them. Now, they are stood there, and with all this evidence, they don't believe. Outside the situation, we say, "You fools, you have all of this evidence, you're still worshipping a cow." Like, God's right there, and it's not even an adult cow. Proverbs 29, verse 25, "Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe." Now, what should have Aaron done at this point? I'll be honest, all Aarons make mistakes sometimes. Not much, but we do. He should have feared the Lord, right? He should have feared the Lord. There it is again. Evil and foolishness take away the fear of the Lord. And they tell you to worship yourself, which the golden calf was just an excuse to do, because they got up and they, you know, indulged in revelry. That was just, they were feeding their own themselves. Don't fear God. Fear other people. What will they think of you? What would they think of you if they knew that you were a Christian? Don't talk about it. Don't give them the opportunity to experience the salvation that you enjoy. Stay quiet. It will be better right now. Take away the fear of the Lord. Every time we choose foolishness over wisdom, every time we choose venting our anger over self-control, every time we choose disciplining our kids in anger rather than taking a breather, over lying, over telling the truth, joining your friends in college or school, bullying others, making them feel rubbish for maybe being different. Every time we choose foolishness, evil, sin, we take a step away from God. Our heart gets a bit colder, a bit harder against him. This is what sin does. This is the brokenness of humanity. As God said to Cain before he killed his brother, sin is crouching at your door and it desires to have you. What happens to fools who elevate themselves to God's position? What happens to those that worship themselves? What is it? What happens to those who, despite all the evidence, they will still worship a calf? Well, let me read from verse 25, Exodus 32, verse 25. Moses saw that the people were running wild and that Aaron had let them get out of control and so became a laughing stock to their enemies. So he stood at the entrance of the camp and said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me." And all the Levites rallied to him. Then he said to them, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Each man strap a sword to his side, go back and forth throughout the camp from one end to the other, each killing his brother and friend and neighbor." The Levites did as Moses commanded, and that day about 3,000 of the people died. Can you imagine what it felt like to be faithful to God that day? Can you imagine the mental health implications of that? What happens to fools? What happens to people who elevate themselves up to God's position? They die. Eventually, fools who spend their lives walking away from God will gain eternal life, getting exactly what they wanted, which is to be away from God. Now, listen, it's a legitimate question to be asking yourself, is God harsh for doing this? Okay, that is a legitimate question. I'd love you to note down a website which I found really helpful in answering questions that I've got, a place where I go when I have doubts or I have questions. It is a website called www.gotquestions.org. Okay, I'm not affiliated with them. I was, but I'm not anymore. I used to write for them. That is a great place to ask questions. gotquestions.org. Sometimes in Christian life you will face fools. So how do we deal with that? Proverbs 26, verse 4, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him." Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. So what do we do? Do we not answer, or do we answer? And we have to make sure that we don't stoop to a fool's level, don't we? But we also need to make sure that we aren't silently affirming their foolishness by our silence. Now, what is your view of the Christian life? It isn't making sure everyone likes you. It isn't passively sitting back and not doing anything. Proverbs 28, verse 23, "Whoever rebukes a person will in the end gain favor rather than one who has a flattering tongue." Sometimes we may be called by God to put speaking wisdom above being liked. This is so hard, isn't it? I am such a people pleaser. I'm in a content state when everyone is happy with me. I don't like upsetting people, but sometimes we're called by God to fear him rather than mankind. As Christians, we do this to point towards Jesus. So it's always done with gentleness and respect. So the big question is it worth it? Is it worth me taking the social hits? I want to say to you, absolutely. Absolutely, it is worth you taking the social hits. Choosing wisdom is an act of war. It is gaining ground against everything evil stands for. Now, the writer C.S. Lewis put it like this. The smallest good act today is the capture of a strategic point from which a few months later you may be able to go on to victories that you never dreamed of. Oh, that's cool, isn't it? Isn't that cool? The smallest good act today is the capture of a strategic point from which a few months later you may go on to win victories that you never dreamed of. Now, my wife is very wise. Okay, I'm a big fan. Before I met her, she went to a soul survivor group with a group of soul survivor camp with a group of teens. And in a discussion one evening, one of those teens said, "I've got faith. I've got a faith here, but I don't want to share it. I don't want to talk about it." And my wife silenced the tent when she responded, "The devil must love you then. You're not a threat. If there's no difference between you and those that don't have the same faith, just imagine if you started to live differently. If you started to live with wisdom, integrity, love, and peace, and the people who knew you, who were closest with you, started to wonder, what is the difference? What's happened? What's changed? How awesome would it be to have your friends and neighbors see that you are different?" I've heard testimonies of people, so many as the time that I've spent working in churches, that they say, "I didn't believe, but then I met so-and-so." Just imagine in 1,000 years' time being in the new creation with all your mates that you so dearly love now. Wouldn't that be exciting? Here's a book that's been advertised to me in the past, Why Men Hate Going to Church. Here's another one, 7 Reasons Why Your Church Needs More Men. Now, Pew Research in 2016 did a study that women are more likely to be religious than men, and that was true in Christianity as well. Now, obviously, we stand against toxic masculinity, don't we? That tells us that all men need to be this kind of axe-wielding, gun-shooting, hunter-gatherers. But I wonder if the false stereotype of men who wear robes and are found in cold stone church buildings drinking tea has put men off church. What we've lost somewhere is in the Bible is preaching the spiritual war that we are in, about being an inspiration to other people. We try to gain their respect. We are loving and kind because of what Jesus has done. We're gaining ground against the enemy. We're calling men to be good dads and workers with integrity and having a place on evil's most wanted list. About being a threat to evil in this world. Being gentle and respectful doesn't mean staying silent when we're with people. Christianity is about men and women who are able to stand strong in this dark world and have a faith strong enough to deal with it. Sometimes as Christians, people don't like what we believe. Sometimes you might face opposition and persecution because of what you believe. And sometimes people will find your passion and your willpower and your ability to stand against the tide an inspiration, and they want to know more. But it's not always easy, is it? Standing in opposition to fools is not easy. And that leads to our final point, 3. Wisdom is an act of war against yourself. We've seen how the devil wrapped up foolishness and made it look like wisdom. How sin and foolishness are wrapped up together. And since Adam and Eve, we've had this brokenness and sin that means doing the wrong thing comes naturally to us before the right one. I want you to turn to Galatians chapter 5. First one there wins. Galatians chapter 5. I win. Verse 16. Galatians chapter 5, verse 16. It says this. "So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other, so that you are not to do what you want." There's a war going on inside of you. If you're a Christian, It's why we are tempted to do wrong. It's because we feel it would make us feel better. But we know how we live matters. We have a reason, don't we? We know that life as a Christian before Jesus comes back. That's an odd sentence. We know, I think what I'm trying to say here is that our life with Jesus is one of internal conflict. Now, what are you like when someone praises you for something that you've done? It feels amazing, doesn't it? Oh, well done. Thank you. Yeah, it feels amazing when someone chucks an encouragement in your direction. Proverbs 27, verse 21, the crucible for silver and the furnace for gold, but people are tested by their praise. Praise can cause an internal conflict. Am I going to patch this onto my extremely large ego, or am I going to take one step above other, and by doing so, I'm going to take a step above other people? Or am I going to take it so that God can use me for his glory? Proverbs 28, verse 13, whoever conceals their sins does not prosper, but one who confesses and renounces them finds mercy. Internal conflict. Am I going to be a person who can say sorry for foolish things, who can openly admit sin, or am I going to dodge the potential humiliation and keep going so I don't get found out? Why does this matter? Because every act of wisdom that you choose, every time you say yes to the Holy Spirit and no to sin, you align yourself with God's will. Proverbs 27:19, as water reflects the face, so one's life reflects the heart. Your choices affect your heart. Every time you choose God's way rather than foolishness, you make it much easier for your heart to do so again next time. You grow more like Jesus. COVID-19, for me, has taken away one thing in our church family that I hugely valued. That was hanging out with old people. I should probably say older people, shouldn't I? Sorry. Now, I realize that there are going to be some people that are watching that are going to call me old. Thank you very much for watching. But chatting, for me, chatting to older Christians was an amazing thing, because what you're doing is you're chatting to someone who has potentially spent their life making wiser and wiser choices each time, bringing them closer and closer to Jesus. You're speaking to someone of real wisdom who's chosen self-control over anger. Hanging out with old people was a brilliant thing to do, and I'm looking forward to a day when shielding is a word that we used in the past. War against evil, war against fools, war against ourselves. Now, you may be thinking, what do I do? What do I do, Aaron? I know I'm a fool. I know I am evil. I know something isn't right in me. Now, if that is you, then please listen, because I do have good news. When Jesus came to earth, he surprised all the religious people by saying that he hadn't come for the righteous people, but for sinners. Essentially, Jesus came to die for fools. So it's no wonder that when Jesus was on earth, we see a man who wasn't passively being nice to people. He was the source of controversy and culture change. He had to face conflict because the massive target he was wearing, because he was the king of the kingdom that was at war with the devil, at war with evil, at war with death and disease. He took my foolishness, and in the biggest act of wisdom in history, he died on a Roman cross in my place. He took my sin and paid its punishment so I could go free. Jesus, the wisdom of God, came to die for a fool like me. That same offer is for you too. Jesus says all you need to do is say sorry for foolishness and follow Jesus. Say sorry for your sin. Believe that Jesus has done for you and take that walk with us with wisdom. Finally, please can you turn to Ephesians 6. I'm just going to read this out and then I'll finish. But Ephesians 6. In fact, just listen to this. Verse 10, here we go. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you may take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God. If you look down at verse 16, in addition to this, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. We're in a spiritual war. We're in a spiritual war against evil, against fools, and against ourselves. But the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Every time you choose wisdom, you take a step forward in victory that has been won by Christ. You step forward with your King. This is my issue with the the footprints in the sand one. It's the fact that it's you and Jesus, but that shouldn't be the case. There should be a whole load of footprints, and Jesus is standing at the forefront in the sand. We stand together in wisdom in this spiritual war. We are a church family, who's walking in wisdom together. Our victory has been won by Christ, and we follow him. How do we do that? What I'm going to do is I'm going to hand over to David and Margaret Rootkin, who are going to be reading for us Proverbs chapter 29, so that you can see this wisdom, these right steps with Jesus in their proper context. So I'm going to head over to David and Margaret Rootkin, who are going to read Proverbs chapter 29 for us. Good morning, guys. Thank you.
Whoever remains stiff-necked after many rebukes will suddenly be destroyed without remedy. When the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan. A man who loves wisdom brings joy to his father, but a companion of prostitutes squanders his wealth. By justice, a king gives a country stability, but those who are greedy for bribes tear him down. Those who flatter their neighbors are spreading nets for their feet. Evildoers are snared by their own sin, but the righteous shout for joy and are glad. The righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concerns. Mockers stir up a city, but the wise turn away anger. If a wise person goes to a court with a fool, the fool rages and scoffs, and there is no peace. The bloodthirsty hate a person of integrity and seek to kill the upright. Fools give full vent of their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end. If a ruler listens to lies, all his officials become wicked. The poor and the oppressor have this in common. The Lord gives sight to the eyes of both. If a king judges the poor with fairness, his throne will be established forever. A rod and a reprimand impart wisdom, but a child left undisciplined disgraces his mother.
When the wicked thrive, so does sin, but the righteous will seek their downfall. Discipline your children, and they will give you peace. They will bring you the delights you desire. Where there is no revelation, people cast off restraint. But blessed is the one who heeds wisdom's instruction. Servants cannot be corrected by mere words. Though they understand, they will not respond. Do you see someone who speaks in haste? There is more hope for a fool than for them. A servant pampered from youth will turn out to be insolent. An angry person stirs up conflict, and a hot-tempered person commits many sins. Pride brings a person low, but the lowly in spirit gain honor. The accomplices of thieves are their own enemies. They are put under oath and dare not testify. Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts the Lord, he is kept safe. Many seek an audience with a ruler, but it is from the Lord that one gets justice. The righteous detest the dishonest. The wicked detest the upright.